I'm told the number one fear people have is speaking in public. It's the one fear I don't have. Join me for the Love Speak series, where we leave fear behind and we speak love. Loving our story, loving speaking, doing what we love, loving each other, and loving ourselves. Our stories are what connect us and make us better humans. So join me and my Love Speaks friends for some stories, some laughs, some inspiration, some speaker tips, and some unexpected truth. It's the Love Speaks series, where a little bit of love goes a long way.
Welcome to the Love Speaks series. Here's your host, Sally Lou Loveman.
Okay, so as an admitted do what you love enthusiast, we are speaking my favorite thing today, which is doing what you love. And we are speaking with someone who literally, my favorite word, could be on the poster for doing what you love. He happens just to love the work and the industry that I happen to be terrified of, which is flying. So I have him on speed dial, of course, on all things airplanes. But he is one of the travel industry's most well-known and respected analysts and advisors. After years with TWA, Continental Airlines, and Ford Research, Henry began Atmosphere Research to provide independent, objective, and trustworthy research on travel industry marketing, product distribution, digital commerce, and future trends. He's on an airplane more than he's in his own bed. He speaks to more audiences, I swear to God, than Oprah does. And he happens to be, you can laugh, and he happens to be my brother-in-law's brother, which makes him family to me. Please welcome the guy that I literally always refer to and his story, and I can't wait for him to share it with all of you because he is so Love Speaks, my friend and brother, Henry Hartevelt. Hi, Henry.
Hello, Sally Lou. Hello.
Hi.
I do not speak to more people than Oprah, but thank you.
You speak to more people in audiences because, okay, fine. She's got a stadium tour for her WW tour that was happening. But like, I'm telling you, you are speaking all the time and you are, Henry is like, you just say, you know, people say Oprah, they know her. You say Henry in the travel world and they know who you are. You don't need a last name. Plus, no one can spell your last name. So your Henry in the travel world has clout, and I saw it with my own eyes, which we'll get to. But let me just start with this. You were raised really, really well. I never knew your dad. I knew your mom. You are a gentleman, and that doesn't just happen by accident. It happens because you were really, really taught to be that way. And I can't thank you enough for being so lovely and welcoming to me. I feel your love every time I'm with you and not with you. And I just wanted to start with that. I thank you for being such a lovely gentleman and a scholar. And so I want to ask you, how is love speaking to you today? That's always my open question when I remember to ask it. How's love speaking to you?
How's love speaking to me? Well, you know, I have on my desk pictures of my partner and my mom and my dad and extended members of my family.
Aww.
And so, you know, love speaks to me through them, through the memories, through
right.
what they taught. You know, through all that they gave me. I mean,
yeah.
you know, importantly, starting with education
right.
and an understanding to, you know, of manners.
Right.
They did a
tip top job on that.
Yeah, thank you. And just never taking anything for granted.
Right, right. I've been in your home. Because when I did an event for an airline and they put me at the Red Roof Inn in San Francisco, I called Henry because we were having dinner and his partner, Dan, and then they picked me up. But unfortunately, I said, this suitcase is coming with me because I'm staying with you. So I had the pleasure of being entertained in your beautiful home. And I will say it was there in your office a lot of model airplanes. I write about this on, I don't know what page, 28 in my book, Speak, Love Your Story, Your Audience is Waiting. I'm a full-on like talk show guest now because I now can drop my book title. and I was going to read it, but I don't want to read it. I want to hear it from you. Tell us your story on which makes you the poster child of Love Speaks, because I want to hear about the smells and the sounds and the feelings and the whole, your dad traveling. Tell us what took you to, from your childhood, to literally take your talent and your passion to become the world's most respected travel analyst.
All right. So with hopefully not boring anybody.
It's never boring.
What I was told is that when I was a little boy, I mean, somewhere between a year and 2 years old, when someone would give me a crayon and a piece of paper to draw on, I would draw airplanes. Now, right. Neither of my parents ever worked in the airline business or in aviation. No one in right. my family ever did. So this is some fluke, or as my mother used to call it, a birth defect. And
his mom is really like funny, Jewish, listeners. Sorry.
Like every Jewish mother, she wanted me to grow up to be a doctor or a banker or, you know, a right. lawyer or something.
Right.
But I grew up and I, you know, just fascinated by airplanes and aviation. And look, when I was a little boy, airplanes and rockets were very much part of not just the present at the time, but the future.
Right.
And, you know, there's a saying in the airline and aviation industries that a mile of road lets you drive a mile of runway can take you anywhere.
Oh, yeah,
and
that's true.
So the curiosity that I have about the world, plus just the fascination I had with airplanes, and as I grew older, an interest in advertising and other marketing-related functions right. led me to a career in the airline industry.
Right.
I was lucky at business school. I was able to do a research project in New Orleans. I went to Tulane University School of Business.
Yeah.
We
the
did
wave. The green wave.
The green wave, right. And we did some market research with travelers. The airlines had been deregulated a few years before. So it was much more market-based. And I was just lucky. And I got, you know, I grew up building model airplanes. At an age where most kids were reading Sports Illustrated or some were sneaking in copies of Playboy, I was reading Aviation Week and Flying Magazine. And
because you're an aviation geek, which I learned.
I was such a little nerd. I was such a little nerd.
I love nerds.
I would go up and down, growing up in New York, I would go up and down Fifth Avenue and Madison Avenue where the airlines had their ticket offices right. and collect the timetables.
Right.
And I would build model airplanes and with my Legos model airports and things like that. Right. Anyway, all I can say is I am lucky enough that somehow I was able to turn my avocation into a vocation.
Right.
Started working at advertising for American Airlines and then TWA and then Continental, in different roles in marketing, right. what we call distribution and network planning, commercial roles like that. And, the hotel business, that's how I ended up in San Francisco running marketing for the Fairmont Hotel chain. Yeah. Branding, I got to work on the United Airlines rebranding and some other travel products, an online travel company. And now 20 years as an industry analyst.
It's amazing. I mean, truly. And you tell a story. I want you to tell it about smelling jet fuel. And as a young boy, that I, right. I love that.
So, you know, to most people, understandably so, jet fuel is repulsive. It's yeah. nasty. It's yeah. stinky. I would smell it as we were getting on or off airplanes or standing out at an observation deck at LaGuardia Airport or Kennedy Airport when my folks would take me out there. And, you know, I just loved it. And if you talk to people, especially pilots or others, you know, who work for an airline, they will tell you that there is just something energizing
yes.
about it. Because to some of us anyway, jet fuel is the smell of opportunity.
Exactly.
It's the smell of discovery.
Exactly. And curiosity.
Curiosity.
And power.
And, well, and power in terms of what it does for the airplane, yes. But, yes. You know, to me, it's also just magical to watch, you know, these many hundred ton airplanes take off. And the fact that you can now fly nonstop halfway around the world from, you know, New York to Singapore.
Right.
And Australia to Dallas, Fort Worth, and all these ultra long routes. It's just amazing to me.
It literally boggles the mind. I will say about the sense of smell. I always love, one of my favorite questions to ask someone is, what smell reminds you of your purpose? And I would imagine you would say jet fuel. For me, the smell of Oprah's hairspray and flat iron at 6:30 in the morning when I used to walk up the stairs of, you know, the studio, that was so powerful to me because it meant it was show day, which meant we were in the studio, which meant we would be transforming people's lives. So that's power, that's curiosity, that's future, that's all of that. And I always love to ask people, and for anyone listening, to think about what that is, like what smell reminds you of your purpose, because that's what really, literally, not, you know, obviously I'm saying this, but fuels you to go out and do what you love, which is why I call you the poster of Love Speaks. But tell me about your dad. Like, he traveled so much. He was a jeweler, and he would, you would, this is back in the day where manners really did like exist. And like, you would take your dad to the airport with your mom and send him off and then greet him also prior to, you know, all of the security measures that we have now. But tell me about like young Henry going to the airport to send his dad off and how that affects you.
Yeah, sure. So my father was in wholesale jewelry. And he imported diamonds and other jewels and designed the jewels, the jewelry, and manufactured it and sold it mostly to independent jewelry stores across the U.S. But he would travel a great deal as part of his work. He had factories in Antwerp, Belgium, and Tel Aviv, Israel. He would travel elsewhere for business. And of course, he would travel a lot for work. Also, something that contributed is my mom was from Dallas, Texas. And so her family was still in Texas. And we also had a lot of other families scattered in the South. So we would go out with Dad to the airport when he was taking a big trip, not all the time, but many times, especially when my parents realized I loved going to the airport.
Right.
And my dad joked that my first word was neither mama nor dada, but Boeing. And
that's funny.
You know, and so I remember going out to the TWA terminal at Kennedy Airport when it was, you know, an airport terminal, not a hotel.
Right.
And again, back then, we didn't travel as much as we do now. Travel was much more expensive compared to today. It was mostly for the very well-to-do or business travelers.
Right.
But it was so exciting. And especially in New York, you would go to what was the old international terminal where the foreign flag airlines were, like Lufthansa and El Al and Sabena from Belgium and British Airways, or BOAC rather at the time, and Air France. And the whole world was there, and you were seeing the world coming and going in a very concentrated way. And, you know, my parents gave me a globe when I was a little boy, and I would just spin it and look at this, and we would study all of these different places in school.
Right.
Anyway, so going to the airport was just exciting. And back then, again, there were observation decks, and you could watch the planes land and take off. Not every terminal had jet bridges, you know, the jetways. So
right.
sometimes you could see the people getting on and off the planes using steps.
Right.
And, you know, I grew up at a very exciting time as the jet age had begun to take over, the introduction of the 747. I'll never forget the first time I set foot on a 747. I could just not imagine a plane being that large.
Right.
And how was it going to get off the ground?
Do you remember
and
how old you were? Do you remember how old you were?
Yes. Sure. Let me date myself to the entire world. I was 10 years old when I was born
okay.
in 1959.
Okay.
The 747 was introduced in 69, and the first time I stepped foot on one was 1970. I was 11 years old.
Right. Wow. Wow. That and that feeling. I mean, first of all, I have certain, like, a formula for a Love Speaks career, which is when an environment sucks you in and pleases all five of your senses, to stay in that area and then, of course, to use your talent. So here you are. You love this. You know, your senses are being just you just feeling it all when you're at an airport, besides just the feel of, and the smell of the jet fuel, the feel of the excitement of the travel. And so here you were wanting to be at the airport all the time, and you're using your talent of being curious. And so that all works. And I think that when we accept those things and we recognize those things, our careers become much more easy to define and to find, as opposed to, oh, what do I want to do? What do I want to do? What do I want to do? So if people take time to really bring that sense of, okay, what environment pleases me? What is my talent? Where can I use it? And how can I use it? And that is a very easy kind of hack to get to understanding what you want to do. And now you are known as the voice of the travel industry, which is just really pretty freaking cool. Do you ever pinch yourself, like, say, like, I'm really glad I, you know, got those posters and airplane models? Sure beats those Playboy magazines.
Yeah. It you know, seriously, I still have a model airplane that I built as a kid.
Oh.
The very first airplane that I was given as a little boy. And I really can't believe the fact that I've somehow been able to turn an avocation into a vocation, because I realize it's not always possible or practical for everybody to do that.
It's not. It's literally a privilege.
It is a privilege, and it is luck, and it is being in the right place at the right time. But, you know, here I am. And I was also very lucky that I got into this industry at a time when advertising and marketing were still very big parts of the airline organization.
Right.
And then being, you know, I was always very interested in marketing research, being able to use that as part of my career throughout.
Right. And that
in
is,
different roles, different companies.
And that is clearly your talent, because that's what you've been using all the way through, your research.
Mm-hmm.
Your research.
Yeah.
Is it really true that, and I really hope it is, because I did include this in the book, that you, let's just hope so, that you learned to fly a plane before you learned to drive a car?
Yes.
Thank God.
So, by the way,
I do no research. I'm the worst researcher on the planet, but go on.
Tell me about that. So most kids want to go to summer camp to swim and to hike and maybe sports or whatever it is.
Right.
Now, yours truly, again, being the son of two wonderful parents, my
folks
found a summer camp that taught you how to fly.
Oh, my gosh.
So up in Bangor, Maine. And so it was called Camp Solo. And I learned
I would be terrified to send my kid to camp solo, first of all. And then, go ahead and fly an airplane and you're 10.
Well, I wasn't 10. I was,
okay.
I can't remember if I was 14 or 15 at the time.
Right.
But I learned how to fly an airplane. We had FAA accredited ground school. We flew with instructors. I was too young to fly alone because you have to be at least 16.
Right.
So I was always with an instructor. But we went through the whole thing. We had logbooks. I even got to take my parents flying, which was a lot of fun. The best thing about that was when we landed, I greased the landing. It was that smooth. And the Delta 727 that was waiting for us to land actually said, whoever flew that plane, if you ever want a job at Delta Airlines, let us know.
I'm sorry. That is so cool. That is so cool. Did you ever want to be a pilot?
Yes, I did. I wanted to be. I grew up, again, many reasons. So one was I was learning to fly when, the air traffic controllers went on strike and a lot of them were fired and the whole aviation industry went into chaos. And I was in college at that time. Mm-hmm. My dad also died when I was in college. And so when dad died, mom asked me to hold off on the flying because, she was understandably concerned about safety and my well-being. And, look, flying is not an inexpensive hobby.
True.
Then life gets in the way. But there was another thing, Sally Lou, that was out there. We go into professions where we see people like us or where we think we will be welcome. And by the time I was in my teens, I realized I'm gay, and there were no gay airline pilots, or at least openly gay airline pilots at that time. And in fact, and I'm not going to name the airline, but we were friends with an airline's chief pilot, and he had arranged for me to fly with a variety of different flights as part of a report I was going to do on what it's like to be an airline pilot.
Okay.
I was going to write
I'm
up
sorry,
to the school
were you
newspaper,
still in college?
All of that.
Okay, college.
I was in high school.
Oh.
And male flight attendants had just entered the workforce at the time or re-entered. And there happened to be a male flight attendant on this plane, and the pilots made terrible fun of him. And then, again, you look around and you realize, oh, there's no one like me. I'm not welcome here.
Right.
So I stopped. I chose to pursue something different. And in fact, several years ago, I actually was at a conference and the head of ALPA, the Airline Pilots Association, the then head of the association, I should say, and I were talking and he said, how come? He asked me the same question, how come I wasn't a pilot? And I told him, and he sat there and he said, I know it's a different world. He said, we do outreach now. There's now the National Gay Pilots Association, a whole bunch of other groups. He said, but I wonder how many Henrys we chased away as a result of that.
Right.
But that is not just something for the airline industry. It's true
for
a lot
it's
of
for
different
every industry.
Professions. And it's not just gay people. It's people of color.
Of course.
It's women. It's a lot.
It's all of it. But what a pioneer. Right. What a pioneer moment for you, even though you didn't do it, it's still like you're part of it. Like you got it. Like you understood. You didn't feel that you would be really best served there in that role. So you took a different role. So you're making different strides in where you are now and hopefully pulling up people in your own Henry way. Right. And there are many Henrys out there that are trying just to be who they are in the environment and in the industry that they want to be in. And thanks to people like you, they can. So.
Right. Well, and there's also something else. When dad died, I remember sitting in my room. This was the day of the funeral and a family friend came back. And, he asked how I was doing. I was in college. I was a junior. And I said, one of the things I'm just trying to figure out now is what my future will be, because the expectation had been that my brother and I would both, go into the family business at some point.
Right.
And I said, going to work with dad was always plan A. And he said, I understand. He goes, but plan A isn't available anymore. So let's talk about what plan B is going to be, because B becomes the new A.
Yep.
And then he pointed to my room and he's like, look, he goes, you don't have model diamonds around. You don't have sketches of jewelry you want to design. You've got airplanes. He goes, this is your calling. This is really who you are.
It truly
is. He said, you can think about what you really want to do as opposed to what you think we're thinking you would have to do.
It's kind of a gift. Wow. I mean, gosh, do you think if your father was still alive, I mean, we would always want that, right? But it is an interesting way to think. Like, maybe you would be in the jewelry business and you wouldn't be doing what you're doing, but you'd be kicking ass, obviously. But it's whatever. The point is that if that's the beautiful gift you can receive from a loss that you certainly weren't prepared for, that happened too soon, then that's the story I like telling. And listen,
I think the fact that Dad always loved TWA, and the fact that I got to work for TWA for several years, and frankly was lucky enough to fly to so many of the places that we flew, and especially in Europe,
right?
That he'd be really happy about that and proud. Yes. Probably wouldn't be so thrilled that I was going to St. Louis all the time, but you know, the trips to Paris and London and Zurich Madrid and everything. I think he would have liked that.
Yeah. Well, what is the number one thing travelers should know in this world, in 2020? What is the, you know, what are some Henry tips that you can give people listening that we just, I mean, we know the basics. We know like the 3-1-1 thing of security and all of TSA and all that. But like what?
All right. So the first thing is that always allow extra time. If you're traveling to an airport, allow more time for a connection than you think you may need, because delays occur, traffic problems occur. There's a longer line than you think at security. There's fewer screening agents, whatever, you know, you want to get something to eat and the line is longer. If, you know, no one has ever said, oh gosh, you know, I'm really mad I had the extra 15 minutes because I'm not sweating now.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, So,
and airports are literal cities. Like you can find, you can go to church, you can get your hair done, you can get your manicure done. Like, there's a lot you can do.
Right. So the other thing is prepare for the unexpected.
Yes.
But, you know, just again, goes to not only allowing time, but, whether it's weather or something else. Another thing is be open to conversation. You know, most of my travel is for business and I have a lot of work to do. But there are times where you are sitting next to someone really interesting and you end up having a really pleasant conversation.
Yes.
And, you know, that's worthwhile as well.
I make airplane friends all the time because when I'm in my purpose, I'm not scared. So if I'm talking to someone and listening to their story, I'm much happier. And so I love that. I also love the unexpected, which I do a whole unexpected workshop on speaking. There's one unexpected thing I don't like, and that is turbulence. Tell us about turbulence. Can you tell us about turbulence? What is it?
It's an act of God. I mean, I will say this. There is technology now that is emerging, and some airlines are using this, that will allow their pilots to detect where turbulence may be and then to avoid it.
Okay, so, I like that.
I don't want to mention airlines because I don't want this to turn into a commercial.
No.
But there are some airlines that have spoken about this, and it does help. I mean, I'm not a big fan of turbulence either. You know, it's fun for maybe 5 seconds, and after that, it can be annoying and sometimes even downright scary.
But is it really like a pothole in the road? I mean, is that the way we need to look at it?
It is. So something else to remember is that airplanes today are built far better than they were 10, 20, 50 years ago.
Right.
The airline industry, the aviation industry learns from mistakes. And these planes are built and tested to levels of stress that they would probably never, ever, ever encounter.
Right.
But that they want to make sure that if for some freak reason they do, everyone will be safe.
Right. Right. Okay. All right. I'm feeling better. What's in your bag when you travel? Like, what are the must-haves that you travel with?
Okay. So I always keep my passport with me. Because it's a great alternate form of ID.
Right.
In case there's a problem with the driver's license.
Right.
As my partner jokes, you never know when you're going to get called to go to Paris for lunch.
If you're Henry, that is true. you guys are so bougie. I love you too.
but the not in a bad way.
We're bougie is a compliment. I love
it. Right. Anyway, but what's in my bag?
So what's in my bag?
I always keep lip balm because you know, you get dried out on an airplane. Mm-hmm. My technology power cords, you know, because you have to live life at a, charged at 100%.
Right.
But also a sketchbook.
Oh, tell us about that.
Sometimes I'll just try. You know, just as I could draw an airplane before I could drive a car, I can draw an airplane. I cannot draw people. So I will sketch out the window of the landscape or things like that to keep myself occupied if I'm not watching a movie or reading some a book or news on my tablet.
Cool. That's very cool. And like, I traveled with you once because of an airline event that I got hired to speak at the event, and you were invited because it was the, you know, the farewell flight, which I didn't really appreciate them calling it that, but whatever, as the fearful flyer. But it was the farewell send off to the 747. Okay, so
we are now put together. We can name this
because
it was
Google
so special. It was the farewell flight. It was the last United Airlines flight of the 747.
Right.
And it recreated their first flight, which was from San Francisco to Honolulu, Hawaii.
Right. Which we did together.
And it was magical.
It was really cool. I had a really bad headache for some reason, but it was really cool. And everyone was dressed in the period, and that was really fun. And if you were invited to be on that plane, you were very special. But there was no one like you. Like, I watched people. I mean, I just happened to be invited to do this through my connections of the wonderful team there at United, that all roads lead to Oprah, because the chief storyteller, Dana, is a former Oprah Winfrey Show producer. And so, but here, Henry, my brother, basically is like freaking rock star status. Everyone is like, there's Henry. You're walking through, you're a freaking rock star because you are the voice of the travel industry. And I met your friends who were all so much fun. And then we had dinner and I listened to you all speaking to each other. It was a language I did not understand because evidently it's aviation and I don't get it, but it doesn't matter because it was, there was so much love there that I understood that there was love. And you said you were a nerd growing up. I find that nerds are really people with passion and love. That is what being a nerd is. If you love something
much, that's fair. Yeah.
If you love something so much and you're so into it, that is basically called love and passion. So I think we should change that term, but whatever. I think nerds are lovers, basically. So I'm listening to all of you talk about something that you love that I'm terrified of. But I just, it gave me more power. It gave me more of a feeling of like, I shouldn't be scared of this because all these people love it. So that really was helpful to me. But what was so cool is to watch you from afar and seeing all that came from, you know, little Henry drawing pictures of an airplane to the voice of the travel industry. So I'm not going to ask you to respond to that because I know you wouldn't. But all I can say is, when you do travel, are the perks enjoyable?
So I get no perks. Okay.
Really?
Yep, absolutely. So if I earn frequent flyer status with an airline, it's because I have met whatever the qualifications for that are.
Got it.
As an analyst, it is essential that I be unbiased, objective, and trustworthy.
Right.
So if I say something good about a company,
it's because you've experienced it.
It's because that praise or that criticism is legitimately earned.
Got it.
So I don't accept any or ask for anything. Now, if you have worked in any industry over time, you've got your network of colleagues and friends.
Right.
To your point about the lingo, the jargon, every industry has its jargon. But the airline industry, as big as it is also small. And so I have run into former colleagues from different airlines, and it's lovely to see them, whether they are, in the main office or sales or a flight attendant or a pilot or whoever it may be.
Right.
But it's not like when I'm check in, there's a signal that goes up that says, oh, Henry's coming.
There's no confetti.
There's no confetti. There's no glitter. This is not Hello Dolly. You do not have people singing and dancing going, you're back where you belong. it is fun. And again, this is something that I do miss. I mean, the excitement that air travel once created,
right.
The fun environment on
right.
the plane. It is
wearing
understandably,
gloves.
Now, that I don't miss, but you know, I never
My mother
really had
does.
To, but yeah, I know. But what I will say is I do think airlines can do more to make flying fun again.
Right.
And you do see, the flight attendants doing what they can to try to
right.
make it a more pleasant
right.
environment, but it's tough.
I will say the one thing that I think the airlines can do better, and I want to know how you feel about the industry. And, I know that the golden age is coming or whatever, but I always find and I've probably already said this to you, but as the audience producer in me, I'm all about moving people. And I always say you need a visual to move people. So we always use mm-hmm. wristbands at the Oprah show. And if you're this wristband, this you go here, you go here, you go here. And I always say, because you said the unexpected happens, delays happen. And I always say when that plane lands and the flight attendants say, you know, let the people off who have connections first, and they say it, but then they don't implement it, which drives me crazy. And I'm like, wristband those people. You know who they are. You've got the manifest. You got the chart. Give them each a wristband so that even if they're sitting on the window, they're going to climb over you to get to their flight. And I'm always thinking, why hasn't the airline industry thought of that? Because it would save so much money with rebooking and all of that. But that's my thing, and that bugs me. But tell me, I don't need you to analyze that, sorry. But tell me how you think the airline industry is getting better. Like
okay,
what's coming for us?
We talk about the so-called golden age, you know, the black and white pictures,
right.
Frank Sinatra or Elizabeth Taylor at the bottom of a set of stairs going
right.
up to a, to jet off somewhere. And sure, those days are gone. But I will argue we are in a new, different golden age.
That's what I mean. Like, what's the new golden age?
It is far safer. Okay. Miss Fear of Flying 2020.
Thank you.
It is far safer to get on an airplane today than it was even 15 to 20 years ago. Pilots are better trained. The avionics are better. The engines are better. Everything from that standpoint is generally much, much safer and more reliable. You can get to where you are going more often than not on the same airline and with far fewer connections than when I worked in the airline business, even just 20 years ago.
Right.
I can now fly nonstop from San Francisco to Singapore, to Dubai, to all the major European capitals, to so many places. I don't have to go to LA or to New York
right.
or somewhere else
right.
for that. And so
it is
far more convenient, and more planes have in-flight connectivity. More seats
right.
are getting power.
Right.
You have audio and video entertainment available either to stream or watch on demand. So from that standpoint, it's good. Now, is what's not so good? The legroom in coach. It sucks. Okay.
There, well, I was going to ask you if you do fly coach, but I didn't want to be rude.
Oh, no. Trust me, I spent more time in seat 99Z than seat 1A. And
your brother might
not. Get off. Yeah.
That's a shout out to Rob.
Yeah. But what I think the airlines have lost is a focus on the customer. Companies like
yes.
Amazon will always ask, what does a decision mean to the customer? Sometimes that answer is going to be good. Sometimes that answer is not going to be so positive. airlines need to do that. They need to start and end saying, what are we going to do for the customer with this fare, with this ticketing policy, with this decision to remove a row of seats or take a restroom off the plane or whatever it might be?
And more importantly, people just want to be heard. We know this from Oprah. It's what she taught me. She taught the world. People just want to be heard. And when we ran our customer service at the Oprah Winfrey Show and people called or people wrote in, I called them if they had a complaint, all they wanted to do was have someone hear them. And so and it always made everything better. And we learned. So at, you know, when weather happens and you've got 100 people standing or 200 people standing in front of you and everyone's, you know, at level 10, if people just could be trained to know that, like, hey, I hear you, I get it, and I'm going to help you. I don't know what I can do right now, but I'm going to help you. It just brings everything down. And because I've been in places where I see gate agents like yelling at people, and I'm thinking, why? Why does it have to be like that? Like, I know stress raises everything, but it just feels like the whole travel world of people working face-to-face with the traveler could use a nice Love Speaks workshop. You know what I'm saying? It's like we all just need to talk nicer.
Right. Well, and I think that's important. That's important for us as the traveler to remember. Yes. You know, pack your patience. Something bad happens. You have to remember that gate agent or flight attendant or pilot did not cause that to happen. And they certainly don't want it because their workday is being affected as well.
Right.
So yelling...
It doesn't work.
Accomplishes nothing.
Nothing.
I have seen agents stay at airport gates until wee hours of the morning when there have been terrible delays because they feel they own that flight, they own that problem, and they are the airline's face to the customers.
Right.
And those are the people, you know, everybody understands at that point what's going on, and you don't have the temper tantrums. Temper tantrums rarely get you anywhere, and they don't work for us as little kids, and they're not going to work for us as adults.
No, definitely not. I see them. It's unfortunate. I always want to just say let's everybody breathe, but then of course nobody would want to hear that. But I just feel like the travel industry is just such a level of hysteria when the unexpected happens, like weather and delays. And it's like a mass group mentality. And sometimes it's the travelers that are rude. That's more the case than the gate agents.
Yes. The sense of entitlement that some people have, well, I'm a triple titanium exalted status person. And, okay, great. Mm-hmm. But hey, the fog is not going to part for you. The snowstorm is not going to stop snowing for you.
Right.
You know, the flight that's delayed is not going to arrive any faster because you're standing at the gate yelling at that poor agent.
Right. Okay, so do you even know how many miles you have flown in your lifetime? Could you even
More than 5 guess? Million.
More than 5 million. That is so cool. How many days of the week are you in flight, would you say?
Well, my business travel tends to be concentrated in periods. And there are times where I have been away for almost for 80 or more days at a time.
And so you're just going from place to place and hotel to hotel.
Yeah, I mean, I might come home for a night or two or perhaps a few days. But then I'm away. And so, for example, between September 1st and December 31st of 2019, I made 3 trips to Europe and 1 to Asia, along with a bunch of domestic flights. And I'm not saying that to brag.
No.
I'm just saying that is part
of your life.
What I do. When you are an analyst covering the travel industry, you have to travel.
Right.
One of the greatest things I met was someone who worked for an aircraft manufacturer. She did market research for them. She was afraid to fly.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And, you know, I said, you do know what your employer makes. And she laughed.
Right.
She goes, yeah. But she said, I love to do market research. And she said, you know, this is a global company. It's based in my hometown. So she said, the irony is I don't have to travel for work. And she said, and when travel does come up, she said, I can send people to those meetings or events so I don't have to go.
Well, she worked it out. She sounds like my kind of girl. I love.
She's great.
I would find anything. I have a neighbor who's a flight attendant for American. Her name's Colette, and I think she's the most kick-ass person. And every time I see her wheel her little suitcase out, I'm like, "Where are you going? Where are you going?" I'm obsessed with her career because it would be terrifying to me. But in the same time, I look at her and I'm like, good for you. You figured it out. And she is working and she's seen the world and she loves it. And to me, I think it's super cool. Can you even tell me your favorite airline? You probably can't, right? Because you're an analyst.
I don't want to say it just because I don't want to.
That makes sense.
Yeah, endorse something. Stupid question. As I tell everybody, no, not a stupid question at all. As I like to say, I love all my children equally, except the ones I'm angry with.
Okay. you need a dog. Yeah. You need a dog because you'll never be angry. Okay, so maybe you won't be able to answer this question either because they are your baby's favorite airplane.
Oh, there's no question. The 747.
It was your favorite airplane.
Yeah.
Now it's still flying.
Some airlines still have it. Right. After that, I would say that I like the Airbus A350 and the 787 Dreamliner.
Oh, of course you do. I want to be on that Dreamliner one day. Window or aisle?
Window.
Okay. Travel app that has changed everything for you.
Oh, goodness. That's a really good question.
Well, thank you.
you know what? I will tell you, it is not the answer you are going to think it is.
Okay.
It is an app called City Mapper.
Okay.
CityMapper.
Okay.
And the reason it changed it, it's about helping you navigate a city and transit. And it will tell you if you're taking a subway or metro, here's the exit you want, stand at this end of the platform or, you know, because when you're boarding the train or whatever or things like that. So I love City Mapper.
Cool. Okay. City Mapper. That's good to know. Okay. TSA pre or clear?
I actually have both.
So which do you use more?
Well, I use them in conjunction. So Clear helps me save time waiting in line, and TSA PreCheck gets me through security faster.
I so don't understand. Please explain. I don't use Clear, so I don't know.
All right. So Clear, it uses our biometrics to validate who we are.
Okay.
And then because you have been validated, they are able to escort you to this screening officer at the head of the line. Clear has basically done his or her job for them. And so then they take you, whether it's standard or TSA pre-check security.
I see. Okay. Best day of the week to travel?
Oh, wow. Another good question. I like flying on Saturdays.
Oh.
Everything is just a little bit more laid back.
Cool.
The airports are slightly less crowded.
Yeah, because it's that in-between day.
It's a Saturday. It's a little bit more chill.
So there's no business travel, but there's also not people.
No. There's a lot of business travel. There's just less of it.
Okay.
But there's a lot more leisure travel. Now, there also are fewer flights. I don't mind traveling really Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, or Saturdays. Mondays, Fridays, and Sundays are just grueling. They're just grueling.
Say that one more time. Mondays?
Mondays, Fridays, and Sundays.
And Sundays, yeah.
Those are the peak business travel days.
Grueling. I know you've traveled the world. I want to know your favorite destination and the destination you haven't been yet that's on top of your list.
Well, I mean, you know, it's like they say in the movies, Paris is always a good idea.
It is.
So I just adore Paris. I would also put up there Sydney, Australia, Tel Aviv, Israel, Petra.
You're literally naming my cities. I've not been to Tel Aviv. I've not been to Israel.
Cape Town.
But wait, are you telling me that you've been to all of these?
Got it. Okay. But I will also add that my favorite destination is home.
Oh.
It's just, so you know, the place I have not been to yet that I really, really want to go is Antarctica.
Cool. Of course, because if you have 5 million air travel miles.
I've spent a lot of them. I've given them a lot of those away.
You've earned them. You have the 5 million miles. Of course, your top place you want to go is Antarctica. Antarctica is never going to be on my list. I'm just trying to get like
penguins.
Tokyo on my list. But I have Tel Aviv first. But of course, who wouldn't want to go to Antarctica? But because you've traveled to so many places, the coolest part is that can be your next destination.
Yeah.
So cool.
And I'd like to go to India. I've never been to India.
Interesting.
And I've just always been fascinated with the culture. And the food and the architecture in India.
You need to do that. India's got to be. Mm-hmm. I would do. Mm-hmm. I feel like that should be next for you. How do you use your story to help others?
I listen to what they tell me.
Yeah.
And I just try to craft my response based on what they've said and my own experiences.
And what you know. Right?
And what I know. Yes. Yes. And where I can, you know, if I can't help them, you know, I try to connect people with someone in my network who possibly may be able to assist.
Yeah. You're so good at that. You're so good at that. I know your mom recently passed, and I know how close you are with her, were with her. I like to use present tense because you are still close to her, and that will never change. What were the lessons that she taught you that you bring into your life and your dad too, that are embedded in you, that you use in your daily life or in your career?
Love, yeah. Honesty, trust, diligence. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to think, what else did she teach me?
Humor.
Kindness, humor, actually both of them, humor.
Well, your dad was funny too.
Very funny. Be passionate. You know, if you believe in it, then believe in it 100%. Do what you're passionate about.
They clearly hammered that in.
You know, give far more to others than you expect to receive back.
Yeah.
And do it because you want to, not out of a sense of getting something back.
Right. And I see that in you so strongly. I see it in your brother, who happens to be married to my husband's sister, which is how we are connected. And so they have 3 children who are your niece and nephews, and who are my niece and nephews. And I always say, and I see all those traits running through them big time. And I always say that there's this heartfelt humor that I see in you, I see in Michael, I see in Ryan, I see in your brother Rob, I see in Lauren. And it's a very funny, very dry, witty humor that you all have. And so that must come from somewhere. It must come from your mom. And now I hear your dad. So I think that that's so cool to see. How does being an uncle, what does that mean to you?
Oh, I mean, it's wonderful. I mean, my brother and sister-in-law have done such a great job with their children. They are smart. They are good. They are passionate. They are involved. They are curious.
Yeah.
They are polite and respectful. They're funny.
They are 3 of my favorite humans.
They each have very different talents.
Yeah. Very different.
And so it's fun. But the best part is I get to, like, you know, get them all wound up or feed them full of, you know, chocolate and caffeine and then drop them off. And
exactly.
Hi.
Exactly.
Rob and Christy, they're your problem now. Bye.
They're your problem. Bye. Well, I think the sense of family that you have is innate. It is in you. It is who you are. It is beautiful. I am so privileged and lucky to call you family. So I thank you for
family
that.
Family is something, thank you. I mean, family is something that actually not just my parents instilled the importance of family in my brother and in me, but
I know what you're
our
say.
Grandparents.
Yes, Lulu.
Our grandparents.
Talk to me about Lulu.
Well, just all of our, I mean, we're a small family. We didn't, right. you know, neither of my parents had many siblings. It's just my brother and me. So family is perhaps far more important to us than it may be to some others. Yeah. But
you don't take it for granted.
No. No. Right. When your dad dies and you're in college, you realize how precious and important family is, and how fragile it is. And that has shaped me enormously.
Enormously. I see that. And let's end on something funny about your mom.
Yes.
Tell us the story about her cooking experience.
Oh, dear God. My mother was many, 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 many wonderful things, but a cook she was not.
I've stumped you.
I was working at TWA. Mom called to invite me home for dinner. She said she would cook. I was already scared. I walk into the apartment. The smoke alarm is going off. The dog is barking and running around, chasing herself in circles. Right. I go running into the kitchen. There is smoke billowing out of the oven. I turn the oven off, open the door, more smoke. I go in. Mom's on the phone. What are you doing here so soon? Mom, it's 7:00. It can't be. I just talked to you. No, that was at 4:30. What's going on in the kitchen? I put the hamburgers in to defrost. When? After I spoke to you. Mom, they've been defrosting at 350 degrees for 2.5 hours. For 3.5 hours.
They're done.
No, 2.5 hours. Yeah, they're done. I said, we're going out for dinner.
And then you put the smoke out, or the fire out, whatever it was.
The smoke stayed in that apartment. The stench of that smoke stayed in the apartment for, I think, 3 or 4 days.
Well, let that story serve you to comfort you and laugh and remind you that your mom is freaking awesome and funny.
Well, she was a wonderful woman.
Yeah,
she was. Just a marvelous parent, a wonderful friend.
Yeah.
Again, she encouraged me, and she even told me she loved seeing me quoted when I was interviewed. She was very funny. She once called me. She said, did you know you were on CNBC? I said, well, I was there. So, yeah.
I love that. That's hysterical. Like, you are Henry. You are living that life. Well, you are the most quoted person in our family. That is for sure. And in many, many industries that people are quoted in, you are quoted the most in yours. So if you've got a Henry Hartevelt quote, you are a lucky person. So I thank you for taking the time out of your day. Where are you, by the way? Are you in San Francisco?
I'm home in San Francisco.
Oh,
yep.
I caught you at home. How cool is that?
Mm-hmm.
Last question. Besides where we can find you, where can we find you on social?
On social, you can find me on Twitter at H Hartevelt. And that is, as you said earlier, I've got the most difficult last name.
So, hard.
So it's at H-H-A-R-T as in Tom, E, V as in Victory, E-L-D-T. And I'm also LinkedIn.
On LinkedIn. Now, on LinkedIn, I get all the time notifications of all your cool things that you're doing. So I love seeing all that. And I'll post this when this goes live. What is exciting you most in the travel industry right now?
Just the potential that technology is bringing to make travel better.
Yeah, that's what you said.
That it can help airlines and for that matter, hotels and other parts of the industry are working to use technology to personalize the offers, to make it easier to find the stuff that we want. Travel has become a lot more democratic in that it's a lot more affordable. A lot of things that used to be available only if you purchase the most expensive product are now available to buy a la carte, if you will.
Right, that's nice.
The world is far more accessible, which is great. But one thing that I'm also really pleased with is a genuine awareness on the part of the industry of its role in sustainability. Mm. So, there used to be lip service and greenwashing and stuff like that. It's genuine now. They realize that they have a role to play in reducing emissions, reducing waste.
Right.
Things like that. And there's a long way to go, but everything starts at the
somewhere.
Beginning.
Right.
Somewhere. spring.
Well, it's good to know that it's happening, because you think about all those planes in the sky and you think, how is it not possible that we have global warming and all these things that we're fighting? So, yeah, it's a start.
Yeah, but, you know, in fairness, the airplanes that we have now are far more fuel efficient reduce far fewer emissions than they once did. So you know, again, a long way to go to make things better, but we're starting that progress.
Starting somewhere is always the best way to start the momentum of what we really all want. So that is good news to hear. Thank you for sharing that tidbit with us. Thank you for sharing all the travel advice that you have. I'm going to go on my next flight, which will be in a few days, and I'm not going to be as fearful, and I'm going to talk to the person next to me, because I do that anyway. But I say, you know, remember Henry's tips, if you're listening, about the tip part, and talk to the people that are next to you. And if they don't want to talk to you, then you can stop. But if they do, then you can have a nice warm conversation with someone that you wouldn't normally have. Welcome the unexpected, except for turbulence. That's never fun. But know that that it's supposed to be there, and that they're working on getting the technology to avoid those pockets of bumps. So that's exciting news to hear. That's very cool. Henry, enjoy being in your favorite destination, which is home.
Thank you. And thanks for including me, Sally Lou.
I wouldn't not. You're in my book. You are in my heart. And you are the poster for Love Speaks. Those posters that you had on your wall served of TWA and airplanes served a great purpose for you. And I'm so grateful that you have been able to turn your passion into literally your vocation. So it's wonderful. And thank you for being a guest here on the Love Speaks series. I'll see you next time.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Henry. Bye.
Bye.
I have loved speaking with you today, and I want to speak with you more. So follow me on all of my social platforms at Live Love Speaks on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And if you want more stories like the stories we speak here on the Love Speaks series podcast, go to lovespeaks.com and pick up a copy of my new book, Speak. Love your story, your audience is waiting to step up your speaking game and your human game. Check out my blog while you're there.
Sally Lou Loveman is a mom, speaker, author, former audience producer for The Oprah Winfrey Show, and founder of Love Speaks. Each week, Sally Lou and her crew have a conversation about how love speaks in their lives and how it can speak in yours. From kindness to composting, no topic is off limits. If you need a community to kickstart your heart, you need the Love Speaks series.
Thanks for listening. Your Love Speaks.